in a New York state of mind. Everyone, it's Natalie here for episode 80 of Glee Chat. Mitch is apparently without internet this week, and John is very, very busy at work in the television industry, being busy and important. So Jack and I have jumped on to do a recording for The Backup Plan, which is the episode that aired last week. I think we wanted to get this one out instead of doing a double episode next week, because next week's episode is the one that Chris Colfer wrote himself, so I think that we'd probably want to spend a fair bit of time on that next week. That's jumping ahead a bit in time, but are you excited for that next week, Jack?
Yeah, I think it'll be good. I'm a bit more excited from what I think you said to me on Twitter about I'm very excited to see how he handles Klein.
Yeah, I actually read an interview today saying basically with him, you know, talking about his creation of that episode that's going to happen next week. And he was like, they were very open with me. They didn't give me too many guidelines. They just said, you can't kill anyone and you can't break up with Blaine. And I'm like, I love they had to warn him not to break up like Kurt and Blaine. You know, if they hadn't said that, he totally would have. He hates that relationship so much and it makes me laugh. But anyway, going back to so we'll have to see how that goes next week. I mean, from what I've seen, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't even see a line of dialogue between Kurt and Blaine, like just out of sheer resentment or like wanting to give Kurt his own plot that doesn't involve Blaine or whatever. I reckon there's possibly not even going to be any screen time between the two of them. We'll see.
Well, I mean, what I think could happen is that, like, we hear in this episode how, I mean, we're jumping really far into ahead, yeah. But how June says to Blaine that he has to break up with Kurt. Mm. Do you think that, I mean, this could all just be timing, but they might have, like, planned that around the time they wanted to give Chris an episode because they know Chris doesn't like Klein, so whoever he writes them might come off as, like, controversy or something, like, conflict between
yeah,
the couple.
Yeah, I mean, I don't
and
really...
And then they break up in the next that. Last episode, maybe.
I mean, oh, God, I hope so. I mean, we're going to have to... God, sorry to anyone listening to this. It's probably going to be pretty opinionated between me and Jack, but given some of the
yeah,
this
so.
Episode. So we'll jump into this episode. Anyway, yeah, Chris's episode next week is going to be very Kurt-centric, obviously. And I wouldn't... Yeah, we'll have to see how he goes with Blaine, but Jack and I were discussing this on Twitter earlier. But aside from that, how have you been this week, Jack?
Yeah, not too bad. Had a bit of a crazy weekend. I had some assignments too, and I had two tests yesterday. One it was like 8 a.m.
Oh,
so that was fun, but no, not too bad.
I don't miss that. I always am like
yeah,
a bit
like. It was
like,
alright. Just...
I mean, I know that some people go to work and like some offices start at 8 or 8:30 a.m. or whatever. But like, I remember in my high school used to start at 8:25 a.m. I used to get up at 6:40 a.m. for school. I'm sure that's not healthy. I feel like schools should be set back to later in the day, like university as well. Like, it should be, like, a later start and later finish as opposed to, like I don't know. I feel weird about how early school starts and, like, how much pressure it puts on people. But so I don't feel like exams should be at 8 in the
morning. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
God, yeah, that's, like, a big discussion, like, that everyone has with high school, whether, like, students are even too stressed out because how early they get up and then how much work they have to do after school.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm usually fine with waking up early because, I mean, every day in high school, I'd wake up at 6 every morning, go for a run and then go to school and then, like, stay up until, like, 12 at night finishing off homework and stuff.
Yeah.
But then last year,
I'd also
get up at 6 every morning to go to work.
Yeah.
And then... Yeah, so I'm used to waking up early. I just had a really, really late night and, like, no sleep that weekend. So I was like, having two tests at 8 o'clock in the morning is not a good thing for me right now.
Yeah, it's yeah. Yeah, well, hopefully it will be a bit better soon. I have spent most of the week watching Hannibal, which is a beautiful and awful show. I have been wanting to watch this show for, like, pretty much since it came out. because both of the stars of it, Hugh Dancy and Mads Mikkelsen, are people I already really liked. I knew they were going to be, like, classy as fuck. It was going to be, like, super homoerotic and, like, not in a gross way, like, in a legitimately awesome way. And that they were going to be these, like, dapper, gorgeous people and all this stuff. But, oh, my God. And it is. It's beautiful. But, Jesus Christ, it's gross. Like, obviously it's gross.
What's it about? Because I see the show...
Hannibal, I mean, are you familiar with... oh, God, you're young. Sorry. Are you familiar with Silence of the Lambs?
Yes, I've seen it.
Yeah, okay. Silence of the Lambs, it's the same... I mean, it's the same character. It was a series of books by a guy called Thomas Harris, and it's about this guy called Hannibal Lecter, who was a serial killer who ate...
Oh!
It's the same story.
Okay, I didn't know they were related.
And the most recent, the most recent Hannibal movie / the prequel book, basically, this is turning into Hannibal chat, but just very quickly, the books are about Hannibal once he's already in jail, and he kind of becomes like a consultant because he's such a good psychiatrist and like profiler. He sort of becomes a consultant to the, and like sort of, has this weird, nasty kind of relationship with some detectives, including Jodie Foster, who played Clarice in those movies, and they come and be like, you know, help us solve these crimes or whatever. I can't really remember what happens. But Red Dragon, which is the most recent of the movies, but that sort of is meant to be the prequel of the books, shows the last case, basically, of Will Graham, who was a friend of Hannibal's and a detective who was the one that caught him and actually put him in jail. So, like, in the movies, he's already in jail, and in the books, he's already in jail, and it's sort of... And it's because of this guy, Will Graham, who was a kind of detective and basically fucked himself up because he's too empathetic. He can solve crimes because he can, like, see and visualize feeling like the murderers, if you know what I mean. And so it really screws him up. But anyway, Hannibal was his friend and his psychiatrist, and he catches him. He puts him in jail. The start of Red Dragon is that happening, and then Red Dragon is a movie that follows Will Graham's story. And he's played by Edward Norton in the movie. This series is Hannibal and Will before all that happened, if you know what I mean. Like, I think that Brian Fuller, the creator of the show, has said that their fourth... season, if they get a fourth season, is gonna be the Red Dragon story. So like the action, and so this is like a prequel to all of the movies, and it's, you know, Hannibal and Will's relationship, and then Will discovering that Hannibal is a cannibal, funnily enough.
Okay, is the TV show actually like in line with the movie, or is it like almost like, you know, have you've got all these Batman movies, but the previous ones aren't, you know, anything through the Dark Knight? Is it like that, or is it similar to like how Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is directly in the Marvel universe? Is it like the same universe?
No. I mean, I think it's another version of the books and the TV show. Like,
okay.
For example, they've got quite a few characters that in the book are different to they are in the new show. A few of them they've made female characters out of like side characters that were originally male and stuff like that, which is kind of cool. But I'm not usually...
That's cool.
I wanted to watch it for so long because it's so beautifully, like, you could see how beautifully shot it was just from like stuff on the internet. You could see how, like, gorgeously homoerotic it was. You could see how classy it was. I love both of the actors. Like, the dialogue, it's just so, like, intensely traumatic. And fandom loves it. Like, the people who create the show and the actors, they're a very positive fandom experience. You know the flower crown phenomenon that's taken over the internet? Are you familiar with that?
No.
Okay. Basically, a thing happened, like, last year in which everything... in that you could imagine in the entire world got a flower crown photoshopped onto it, to the point where flower crowns became so popular that it's, I don't know which one informed the other one, but flower crowns are now like a hipster accessory, and I'm not 100% sure it's not because of Tumblr. But anyway, Hannibal was the thing that started the flower crown, like them photoshopping flower crowns onto it, and,
okay,
and the cast and crew would like take photos, and they sort of got wind of it, and it's just a very positive back and forth experience with their fandom and the show creator. They really support each other, and they'd be like, lol, you know, taking photos with the flower crowns, like on the cast or on the dead bodies or stuff like that. Like them. Anyway, look, I don't want to keep going on about Hannibal because whatever. But I've been watching Hannibal in an unwashed daze for the past like a couple of days, and I've been putting off watching it for like a year because I thought I wasn't going to be able to stomach it because it is super gross. Like the gore and the imagery is really, some of it's really disturbing, but it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be, at least so far. So
yeah,
fingers crossed. Anyway, moving on to...
Just quickly. That's right. I know, because I know you like this, Natalie. That's what I did with New Girl, like in my mid-semester break. Because I'd watched New Girl when the first season sort of was... The first season was out on DVD, so I watched it when that was out. Mm. Then I sort of started watching season two, like, in line with it. I love that show. But then I stopped watching it, I think, when, spoiler alert, when Nick's dad dies, just because I think I couldn't find a download link one day, and I sort of put it on the back burner and just forgot about it. But rewatching, like, rewatching the first season and the first two seasons and the rest of season three that's out, I forgot how damn good that show is. And like when they meet Prince and
I haven't seen season three. I've been waiting to do season three all at once. I haven't seen. I know there's a princess.
Okay.
But like yeah. I love
it's so
girl,
good.
And I do not know what happened with, again, this is very very not Glee, but I started.
Well, Natalie, we could just make this Glee Cat After Dark.
No, we'll leave it. I started watching New Girl actually because it came on directly after Glee. When I watched a live stream of Glee, and it would be like New Girl, and I'd keep catching bits of it, and I was so annoyed. Like when the premise for New Girl came out, like that it was going to be Zooey Deschanel, and she was going to be like, you know, the weird one who'd been living with her model friends, and she was the weird kooky one, and then she goes starts living with all these dudes. I thought it was going to be the worst and most annoying show in the universe. I hated Zooey Deschanel. I do not know why. I just really disliked her so much. And then, I don't know, I just kept catching bits of New Girl, and I just kept watching it, and I don't know why. I was just like, I'm just watching this. I just am. And then it's so good. Like, and I love her. Like, I love Jess. Like, I never thought I would love Jess as much as I do. And I no longer resent Zooey Deschanel for no reason. And, like, I don't know. I was just so annoyed by the premise of this show. I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to be so... And I know other people who feel the same way. I've got friends who are like, oh, my God, she's going to be so quote-unquote quirky and it's going to be so annoying. It is brilliant and I love it. So, yeah, props to New Girl. It's actually written by... The writer, Elizabeth Merriweather, actually wrote a movie called No Strings Attached, which has, I think, Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis in it. And it is a rom-com that's, like, surprisingly amazing. Like, the writing is, like, weirdly, like, next-level good and, like, not the usual for a rom-com. So see that movie as well. Anyway, let's talk about Glee now.
Well, like, Okay. One more point. Then we'll get on to Glee. Well, shows like New Girl, like where I'm pretty sure like Zooey Deschanel was either like a producer or a writer, or she's like very close to the actual production of the show, makes such a difference in the quality of like the TV show. Like, I mean, I've said on this show before, Parks and Rec is literally one of the best shows ever. Like, it is one of the best shows you ever see. I recommend it to any person watching it. Watch Parks and Rec. And I know Amy Poehler. She's one of the funniest people alive. She's very like. You know, she's like one of the main creators and producers whatever of that show. Like, it just makes a whole difference, you know.
Yeah. And I don't know how it goes as far as producing go, but another good comedy which is in the vein of New Girl is, I don't know if you've seen it, Happy Endings. Do you see Happy Endings at all?
No, I've heard of it.
I think it was an ABC show. It got cancelled. I think it had three seasons. So amazing. The two lead characters are annoying as fuck, but they're meant to be. They're meant to be like the stupidest characters. And it's an ensemble show about these like 6-7 friends or something in Chicago. So good. It used to be filmed at Paramount, like on the same lot as Glee. Like when I did the tour of Paramount, I actually got to go on the Happy Ending set. Such a good character. Has one of the most amazing amazing queer characters I've ever seen on TV, Max, who's played by Adam Pally, just not your stereotypical gay dude at all, but all his stories are so beautiful. And he makes out in one episode with Max Greenfield, who plays Schmidt on New Girl. So
that's probably where I've heard it from.
Brought that full circle. So, yeah, it's such a good show, and it's a shame that it was cancelled. It's so good. That cast is all really, like, in love with each other as well, and they do a lot of, like, cool comedy stuff. Anyway,
yeah,
we should talk about Glee now, but there's some other TV recommendations for you people if you're... you know, bored of Glee, or if it's going to end next week or you need something to catch up with. This is episode 18 of the season of Glee, and we're only getting 20 episodes this season because reasons. So, yeah, it's almost over. So we've got Old Dog, New Tricks, and then the Untitled Rachel Berry Project, I think, is the name of the finale, which I guess is in 2 weeks. And we'll see, I guess, I think that's what's going to be the end of this episode is going to tie into that Untitled Rachel Berry Project, I assume. But the whole situation in this episode is that it's 3 weeks into Funny Girl or something, like not that far in, but 3 weeks into Funny Girl on Broadway, and we kind of see Rachel being successful already. You know, she's got stage door fans, she's got, you know, apparently paparazzi, and which does not really happen to Broadway stars, just saying. Maybe celebrities who are starring in a Broadway show, but not just Broadway people. And sort of she's thinking she's all that, you know, seeing, you know, obviously the bit, there's the bit with the homeless guy whose newspaper she signs. Oh God, sorry. You know, and sort of the crux of this is that she gets signed by an agent. She gets an agent. You'd think she would have already had an agent already, but apparently not.
I mean, that's what I thought. Like, you'd think she'd have one. But
Yeah, you'd have to have some sort of representation to sign, like, with that. But anyway, whatever. It's ICA, which is a real agency, which a few of the Glee cast have been signed to. So that's also interesting. I don't know if they just went in and used their real offices or whatever, but...
I'm sure they did that with the fox at the end of the episode.
Yeah, yeah, of course. So she goes in and, so she goes in and, you know, is having this meeting with the agent and, you know, he's kind of, you know, trying to sweet talk her, like, you know, talking real fast and not, you know, sort of overwhelming her. But, I mean, and saying all of these other people, you know, don't listen to them, listen to me, blah, blah, blah. And basically Rachel has these grand ideas about, like, doing... film or television after being on Funny Girl, being in Funny Girl, and the agent that she's with seems to be kind of against that idea and, you know, telling her, basically tells her that she's got a face for radio, which is nice, and that, you know, they just sort of want her to be in, you know, for all that he's saying, you know, the sky's the limit, you can do anything you want. He's basically saying that what they want her to do is just do a run of Funny Girl for about 10 years or something. So,
yeah.
I mean, that whole situation, I don't know. Number one, I don't think a talent agent would ever say that kind of thing to someone, like, because that's not, especially someone who is currently employing them and currently successful, they would not handle that like that. But, I mean, do you... what did you kind of think of this whole agency situation and also Rachel's attitude that she wants to, like, move into the medium of film?
I get it. I mean, we could definitely get into, like, the deep end of this fast, so I'll try not to, but, like, I get that eventually she wanted to move away from Funny Girl and, yeah, as she said, maybe do a TV show or a movie. Like, that's obviously can be in her, like, career and her future, but not 3 weeks after she's only just gotten it, you know. So, I mean, that's a whole other story. We can get into that later on, but...
Yeah, I mean...
It would seem very realistic if she had been in the show for years, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something to me that was a bit like... And, I mean, it's obviously something the other characters address as well, but it's very, like... Okay, so this has literally been your dream role since you're a child. You've been doing it for 3 weeks, and now you're like, oh, I want to do something else. Like... okay, fuck you, basically.
Yeah,
Like, sorry, but yeah. Like, I don't know, I just, it was strange to me. I mean, the way that the guy talked to her and was talking about, like, her nose and stuff like that made me wonder if, like, they used to be pretty candid on the show about, like, in interviews, like, oh, yeah, this was a thing that happened in real life, and now it's in the show. And it made me wonder if this was something that potentially ever happened to Lea Michele. Like, maybe not the attitude, but maybe, like, people telling her that before she comes to, you know, before she came to Glee, because she hadn't really done any on-screen stuff before that either. And, you know, people, I don't know if she had, like, some sort of bad representation that sort of treated her that way, but I wouldn't not believe it, because the Jim Rash character, the TV producer that ends up coming in later in the episode, is, I swear to God, based on Ryan Murphy. Like, I swear he based him on him, like, they based it on himself, but, you know, who knows. But I very much like that, but it was funny. But the other big guest star in this episode was Shirley MacLaine, who's a Broadway legend and screen legend. And that's
I thought you were talking about June. Yeah, no.
No. Yeah, the actress. Kurt oh, God, I forgot we were going to have to talk about the One Direction song. Okay. sorry.
You'll see what I put.
Oh, no. Hang on. So basically she's coming to NYADA to do they're renaming a dance studio after her, because she is June Dalloway is a socialite, an upper-class Manhattan rich person who basically, you know, knows everyone and supports artistic endeavors, which is very much a part of upper class New York culture, this whole scene of rich people who just give money to things, which is a bit strange. But, so she's having a dance studio named after her. So apparently Kurt, out of everyone, was the person who got, when they said, Kurt was selected to perform there. And kind of the scene where they basically talk about this, Kurt and Blaine, I thought he was going to mean like, you're one of like 10 people performing at the showcase, but no, it ends up being just Kurt, and it's real bad. But anyway,
they mentioned there was going to be a few people there, but I think we only just saw them. But what I thought was odd, like, is what you said, how they sing and everything, and then that ends, everyone sort of just, the audience just talks to each other like that was the only thing they were seeing. But even though it's mentioned that they're going to be seeing other people perform.
Like, I assume that they weren't the only, like, they kind of did the whole thing like it was just the one, like, he was the one person out of all of NYADA. And he straight up tells Blaine in the street that he wants to sing Story of My Life by One Direction. And then Blaine's like, but it's sung by 5 guys. How are you going to get all those layers? And they're like, you're going to sing it with me. And it's, okay, here's
one other person.
Yeah, here's my thing about this. My first big thing was that it's a dance studio. Why are you having someone sing? Why wouldn't you showcase a dance performance? I mean, it's whatever, plot point, but why not name, you know, it's not like you can just make Kurt do a dance performance, so why not make the thing they're opening into not a specific dance studio. Anyway, it annoyed me. But so
basically, that's the only set they can use. Yeah, that's the only set they have in NYADA.
Just, I don't know, it just didn't make sense to me, and whatever. But anyway, so Blaine apparently knows nothing about New York socialites, which I found mildly difficult to believe. Number one, not only does he say he knows nothing about New York socialites, It's also that, you know, he thinks that it's a Broadway star, and he's like, what, you know, what old Broadway star is this that I'm meant to know who it is? What are Blaine's interests, and why is he doing theater at NYADA if his interests are writing Star Wars fan fiction and humanitarian rights and not old Broadway? Like, he's no Kurt or Rachel in terms of, like, of actually caring about being a performer, like, which I think he loves performing and he loves attention and he loves, like, bringing people together through, you know, or whatever. But I don't know, like, he's no Kurt or Rachel or, like, all of the other people we've seen at NYADA. So, anyway, I'm just going to move on from that because it's weird and it's weird.
Well, I know what you mean. Like, Blaine, like, and they say it at the end, like, Blaine just wants to be the center of everything, which is why he's appealed to June Dalloway, because that's just exactly what they say. Like, he's appealed to her because she's literally the center of everything. So
yeah.
I understand, like, he But honestly, I hate Blaine so much now, and I'm not going to get into a big Blaine tangent because I've done it before in this show. But they just don't know what to do with Blaine sometimes. Like, one minute he's singing Billy Joel in a dive piano bar, the next day he's singing Sondheim at Niada, and
yeah, I feel like he does it. They don't know what Blaine's interests are, if you know what I mean. Like, and it's so weird. Like, they're not like guided by a specific. Like, and Kurt, as if Kurt gives a fuck about One Direction. I'm sorry, but I mean, like, I was so... I don't know why, but it always makes me really uncomfortable when they reference the artist they're singing in that way, especially if it's a new pop artist. Like, if they're like, oh, I'm going to sing Miley Cyrus, or oh, I'm... Or when it's like, oh my God, the worst was when Blaine came in and he was like, oh, we should sing Candles by Hey Monday. I'm like, Blaine... You do not know who Hey Monday are. I guarantee you that.
Honestly,
you
can... I like it.
I hate it. I hate it so much, and I don't know why. It's not like I think Kurt doesn't know who One Direction are. He obviously, like, I don't know anyone in this world who doesn't know who One Direction are, but I don't know why. It just makes me feel weird when they, it never feels natural to me that when the, maybe it's just the delivery. Maybe if they just said, maybe if they changed it, maybe if Kurt was like, I really want to sing Story of My Life. And Blaine was like, what, the One Direction song? I don't know. Maybe it's the delivery, but like whenever they're like, I want to do Boom by Boom Artist, it always feels really forced and awkward and weird to me, and I hate it, and I wish they wouldn't do it.
See, I feel so different. Like, to me, it does feel natural. But however, I think that in this scene, it didn't, because I wrote in the recap, this was terribly acted. It was terrible. Like, they were talking like they were... They could have literally had the... script in their hand, reading off the script, and if you take that script away, it was just exactly the same. You know, that could just be almost like how, I mean, I am pulling a weird comparison, but like in a class, right? If you're doing a presentation, and you've got and you're holding your speech in your hand and you're just reading off like your essay sort of thing, like that's not a speech, you're just reading off an essay. That's what this scene felt like. So I get it in this scene, but like, I mean, for example, when Mercedes and Santana sing the Lauryn Hill song, like they sing the song, they do all that, and then the next scene, like whenever we go back to the studio, Deshaun, who I'm guessing is like the producer, which is a stupid name, he's just like, oh, that works for a Lauryn Hill song, but not
that,
what we're trying to do.
I'm
like,
yeah, that feels natural. That was well done. That's fine. I think it really bothers me. I think the more current or contemporary or like really, really current a song is, the more it annoys me that they do it. But, and I don't know why, it just does. But
I think it was shit. I think it was pretty shit in the one you mentioned about Hey Monday. Because,
oh my God.
I remember literally like that Blaine comes in and he says, oh, I'm doing Candles for Hey Monday. And then Kurt says something like, oh, you're doing that. You're usually so top 40. And I'm just like, okay, well then, okay. Yeah, I know what you mean in that scene. Like Kurt,
I find it really hard to believe that both Kurt and Blaine know who Hey Monday are well enough to reference, like...
their musical status, yeah.
Like that. I was just I'm pretty sure only about 14 people know who Hey Monday are, and I'm friends with all of them on Facebook. So, like, no. I mean, they were just a tiny emo band that were signed to the record label that Pete Wentz from Fall Out Boy owns, and they had no hits, and they
and their
just,
cover of the song wouldn't have helped them at all.
And no, and it was just like, no, it was so random, and I just, anyway, let's move on from that. So, the Mercedes
and like, they really fucked them up. They could, like,
God, yeah, seriously, if the most that people know about Hey Monday is that they did Candles, like, no wonder, like, that I'm not successful because far out, that song is terrible. The Mercedes and Santana plotline was really good. I really liked this because basically I think Mercedes might be living with, who lives with Mercedes now? What, Santana, Sam,
it's only meant to be Sam and Blaine.
Blaine? Like, I don't know. Like, what? Because Mercedes is like, oh, you're home early.
It's really just Mercedes, Sam, and Blaine.
Then
yeah,
why does
so
Santana
weird.
Live there?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I've never
Mercedes
addressed
comes
it,
back and is like, oh, you're home early. Maybe she just doesn't want to live with Rachel anymore, which seems a bit unfair to have four people in one apartment and two in the other, but, like, whatever.
What about Artie? Like, where does Artie live?
I think Artie lives in his dorm. I think he lives at the school or whatever. Like, I don't know. But, ugh. Anyway, maybe
I don't know.
So maybe Santana lives on Mercedes' couch. Sam lives in Mercedes' bed, and Blaine has his own bedroom. I don't know. Like, because there was that whole like
Santana and Blaine share a room. That'd be fun.
Oh my god! Please, can that be a thing? Like, please.
I know. I want that scene.
Oh my god! But yeah, because I know in the last episode, like Rachel was when they were talking about the whole like virginity thing. Rachel was like, but you guys sleep in the same room. So clearly Sam and Mercedes, like, sleep in the same bed every night. So whatever. By the way, I wasn't on the episode you recorded that for that. But was, like, the impression that you got that, like, Mercedes was, like, she wasn't legitimately telling the truth about wanting to wait for marriage. She just wanted to see what Sam would do. Because, like, to Rachel, she was like, oh, maybe in a few weeks or months I'll feel differently. Like, I was like, okay, so you're just, like, testing the situation and, like, seeing what he's cool with. Like, I don't know, it just seems strange to me, but
no, I didn't get it that way. I mean, I just thought that at that point in time, she really thought that she wanted to wait for marriage. And then, like, I mean, Mercedes' religion has never, I mean, I'm not saying she's not faithful to her religion, but it's never been addressed in a way whereas, like, Joe's was, or even Kitty's was, you know, like, it's always just been, yep, she goes to church. Yeah, she sings at church. She's part of the club when they sung Stereo Hearts in. I'm blanking.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I can't remember that. Yeah, they sung in that club. But at that point, she's just like, yeah, I want to wait for marriage, but in months' time, I might not be able to, because maybe she's just not as, like, intense with her religion as some other people.
I don't know,
And the show presents it that way, so I love Miss X now anyway, so.
Yeah, it just confused me a bit. But yeah, so Santana was at her place for some reason, possibly lives there. And, you know, she's coming home, having trouble at the recording studio, says that she's got to have, you know, a good single ready by next week or they won't get the release date they wanted for the album. And Santana kind of reminds her how awesome they were when they sung together in high school and maybe she should come in. And I totally, like, forgot about all of their, like, epic duets until they said this. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Because they haven't had screen time together in, like, 3 years. Like,
no,
like, you know,
the best song that they've ever done has been River Deep Mountain High. That's one of the best songs that Glee has ever done. Like, River Deep Mountain High, man, like, can't get enough of that.
Yeah, like, Santana's been away for the, like, time since Mercedes moved to the East Coast. And then, like, before that, you know, Santana was in nearly all of season 4, but Mercedes wasn't really a regular. So, like, yeah, it hasn't really been since, like, they graduated, since they've had any screen time. So it's like, oh, yeah, I remember this. Cool. So that's kind of got me a bit pumped. And Santana is already kind of, like, you know, since the return, you know, of whatever her grand Lesbos trip or whatever, she feels different. Like, and it's a very big part of the episode. Like, Santana in this episode is very low-key and self-deprecating compared to how she used to be. And I don't know if she's, like, gone off and learned some life lessons or something, but she seems to
I know that we pulled the reference on another episode. I remember saying this to you, Natalie. I don't know what we were talking about, though, but Santana reminds me of Derek Hale coming back in 3.
You haven't said that reference to me, so yes.
Yeah, I definitely have. It was about someone else, though. I don't know. It was on the podcast, but I don't remember what.
She's definitely, like, kind of come back and is like, oh, okay, so this is how I have to, you know, live life, which is a good thing. I mean, going back to Rachel, they basically kind of show her, you know, I guess monotony of the doing the same show every day, putting on her makeup, taking, you sort of see the time pass because, like, the flowers there fade away and whatever. And
it's so cheesy. Like, when you replace the flowers.
Yeah, okay. She does this with, like, an acoustic version of Avicii's Wake Me Up, like, Wake Me Up When It's All Over, etc., which is just, like, again, I'm just like, girl, you wanted this for so long. You've done 4 weeks of shows or 5 weeks of shows now, like, you know, 40. I think the guy comes in and is like 46 shows or whatever. Like, that's like 8 shows a week. That's about, I don't know, 6 weeks worth or something. And it's just like, girl, really? Like, you're over this already? Like, what do you want? Like, what do you want from life? Please. And it's very strange, but so she seems kind of bored and whatever with it, which, I don't know, were you as insulted by this as I was?
Oh, God, yeah. Like, I was like, Rachel's my favorite character, and I said on a post on Hyperball, I said something like, you know, it's hard to put because I'm never gonna stop watching Glee. Like, I'm never gonna stop watching Glee, obviously. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's not that far to go now, but you know.
But even then, like, I would never stop watching Glee because I'm so attached to the show, clearly. But Rachel has always been my favorite character, and if they I'm sorry for the language on this episode, but if they fuck up her storyline with her Broadway thing, I'm gonna be so mad because that's where she's been going from since day one, and you know, like, why. I mean, I've always said this, if Funny Girl and this storyline was happening, maybe even next season, if there's going to be a time jump, we don't know what's going on with that. Like, if this was happening years and years down the line, I would be so into it. I would be so all over this plot line. But it's just the fact that now it's happening. It's like,
yeah, I mean, it's really, I don't know, it's just so weird to me because it's, I mean, I don't know if they're just trying to ultimately make it Lea Michele's story in that
people have said that,
like, successful, yeah. And then she gets, like, the untitled Rachel Berry show is going to be, like, Glee, right. If you know what I mean? Because then, yeah, she meets this guy, the producer from Fox, who's played by Jim Rash, who, if anyone doesn't know, is a legend. He plays the Dean on Community, which is a completely ridiculous and amazing role. But he's also a screenwriter, and I believe he nominated for or won. He got nominated or won an Oscar for his screenwriting on what's the movie called? God damn it! Oh my God! Why can't I remember the name of the movie? I know it.
I just know him from How I Met Your Mother as Lily's dad.
Oh, lol, that's cute. Really? He's pretty. He's not old enough for that. He's only like 40, like,
I'm sure he is. I mean, I have, maybe he was Moby on how, okay, I'm gonna have a look. What's his name? Jim Rash.
Yeah, Jim Rash. The Descendants. Yeah. The movie, yeah, he won Academy Award for Best Adapted Screenplay for The Descendants. I think he also wrote True Detective, which was big, you know, fairly recently. But
he was Moby. He was not Moby on How I Met Your Mother. That's right.
Okay, hang on. Yeah, so anyway, Jim Rash is a very, very, very cool guy. He's completely ridiculous and hilarious. He's a comedian, he's a writer, and he is, he also did The Way, Way Back, which is meant to be really good as well. But
yeah, I've heard that's really good.
Yeah, it's meant to be amazing. So, anyway, we'll have to see there. But, I don't know about what his involvement was with True Detective. I had a thing and it's gone. Anyway, the point is, he is playing the Lee Paulblatt, who is meant to be the television producer from Fox, who basically comes in and introduces himself to Rachel and says he, like, loved her in the show and he wants her to audition for a new pilot, The Song of Solomon, which he basically wants her to come to LA, do a screen test, next Tuesday, you know, and basically he kind of talks at her and is like, no, I'm gonna leave before you can say no, like, you gotta come and do this and blah blah blah. And I don't think he's directly based on Ryan Murphy, but I feel like there's something about him that's meant to be a self-insert, because I think, you know, ultimately, you know what we see at the end of the episode, at least, like, he goes up and down in the episode. You don't know whether he's meant to be like an antagonist or, like, you know, someone, you know, because obviously the agent was kind of a douchebag and this guy comes in and we don't know whether we're meant to be on his side or whether it's meant to be, you know, oh no, Rachel shouldn't listen to him, she should stick to the Broadway. But ultimately, I think he's meant to be painted as a relatively good guy given what he does at the end and given even if we don't approve of the, you know, direction Rachel's going in. And I kind of like him, like, I kind of liked the character a lot, but the way he talked was very funny to me. And she's very excited, basically, I think. You know, I think part of the reason that she's very excited is because, you know, the agent talked to her in that manner and was like, you'll never, you know, be good enough, you'll never be pretty enough for television or whatever. And this guy comes in and was like, I can see you on television. And so I think that's more of a reason for her to jump at it, if you know what I mean, because her agent's told her it's never going to happen. And this guy comes in and is like, you could do this. And she's like, oh, my God. But seriously, leaving the show, like, 3 weeks in, or, you know, 6 weeks or whatever it's meant to be, it's just whatever.
I mean, like, She's Rachel is like the most ambitious character like on this show. So, I mean, I like I said at the beginning, I get that she'd want to do this, but not yet. Like she's worked her ass off for like what 20 years of her life to get to this point, and now she's just like, yep, the first or well, the second agent talent agency whatever comes in, yep, all right, sure, I'll go. No worries.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
And I mean, she asked Sydney, the producer, Michael of the show, Michael Lerner, for the day off, basically, you know, because, you know, she might be getting a bit sick or whatever, and he basically says no. Like he says, no, we'll find, you know, another solution or whatever. And basically she is the show and everything's depending on her, blah blah, which is true. And I don't know, man. Like, I just don't know what side I'm meant to be on of this whole situation, because to me it just seems so ungrateful and ridiculous. And I don't know. We'll have to see where it goes, but.
Yeah, and I'm getting a little tired of the Rachel plotline where it's always, yeah, she's so high and tidy, then gets knocked back down, and so high and tidy, knocked back down all the time. And like, how many second chances is she gonna get, you know?
Yeah, I
Like,
know. It just.
I
Ugh.
think there's going to be a big blow. I think there's going to be a huge blow up in the finale because, I mean, I've said this before many times. The first eight episodes, bar the Corey episode, were complete shit of this season. But ever since it got back, it's been really, really great in acknowledging its faults, but not sorry, no. Ever since I started in New York, it's been really great in not acknowledging their faults, but making things better in a way. So, I mean, but every time I get trust and faith that Glee is going to be better, it rarely delivers. So, so let's. I'm just waiting for a big blow up in the finale where just all shit breaks loose, all hell breaks loose, and yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the yeah, I don't know, man. I just
I just don't know what we're doing because, like, we've gone through 5 seasons of the show to a point where Rachel had the biggest thing Rachel's ever wanted to do was be on Funny Girl in her dream role, and now she's got there. Now she's bored, so I feel a bit lost actually. Now that's it. That's what I'm trying to say. I feel a bit lost. Like I have no idea where we're going with this show now, which is a little exciting, but definitely very insulting. Like because how far we've come with Rachel up to this
Yeah.
point.
And I mean, I just want to jump ahead to this and then we'll go back to Santana and Mercedes' plotline. But Rachel and Kurt sort of talk about it, and he, you know, he kind of has the audience part of being like, yeah, this is a bad plan, and
Yeah.
everyone who has, you know, wanted, you know, everyone's knows this is what you've wanted forever, and yeah, lots of celebrities started out on Broadway, but they aren't people who were like, no, you know, nobodies. They didn't just quit after a month of one Broadway show and then jump onto television and become successful. Like they were people
Yeah.
who became successful on Broadway and then doing all that stuff. And
And
I don't
that's the
know, like,
thing.
what did you think of that whole scene?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like with Kurt, the conversation they have, she had with Kurt, I was surprised with everything Kurt was saying. Not because I disagree with him; I 100% did agree with him. It's just the fact that whenever Glee does shit that like this, which is very controversial and not like, you know, just against usually character motivations and stuff. Whenever something like this happens, they never address it until like episodes in advance, and it's always, you know, like lampshading. So I
Yeah.
was so that's why I was all surprised at like, oh, they know that they know this is wrong. Like they know that this is going against everything, and they're addressing it. So like that's why I'm just confused as to where we're going after this. You know, I just don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Then yeah, I don't know either. I just it's and this is the thing, like, and we'll talk about it at the end of the episode, but it's like literally every step of the way, it's like, this is a mistake. You were making bad choices. This is really wrong and douchey of you. Yet she still gets rewarded for it at the end, if you know what I
Yeah,
mean. I'm
and
just like,
despite and
what?
yeah, every
I don't know, man, but.
despite everything, she still like accepts the role after she was threatened, not threatened, but told rightfully that she would never work on Broadway again if she pulls crap like this again. And
Yeah.
literally 5 seconds after she's told that, she
So, oh
pulls crap
yeah,
like that
cool.
again. You
Anyway,
know?
we'll have to see there, but yeah,
Yeah.
Rachel and Santana. I actually kind of like this scene with
Yeah.
yeah, the producer that they're trying to do a track and sorry. And he whoever played him, Dushan, was a very cool, like, natural actor. The way he was like, oh yeah, like Bruce Springsteen once put a drop set down in an elevator and you know, all of that. And it kind of, it didn't seem that implausible. Like, I mean, it is true. Like, it actually felt like really natural, and people do experiment with recording. Like, some people record naked, some people, like, you know, there's all sorts of different, you know, styles of recording. You know, some people record on the road. They put up, like, you know, mattresses in a hotel room to buffer sound. Some people record, you know, in a bathroom. Like, it is a thing that people experiment with. So I actually liked that scene a lot. The number, I didn't really feel like showed off their voices as well as it could have.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I mean, as I said, River Deep Mountain High is always going to be one of the greatest songs they've ever done. And even songs like, they did The Boy Is Mine in season one, and I'm sure there's a few more they've done together. Mm. Like, the song didn't show off their voices like that, did it? But it was pretty cool. And like you said, everything with this scene, despite the fact that Mercedes has gotten this wonderful
recording. Mercedes getting the record deal is the weirdest part of it. But like, not that she's good.
Besides that, the process they're going through is actually what you think of. Like, yeah. I could imagine myself reading like an interview or something about saying how a band created a song, and then be like, oh, we didn't know what we were doing, so we tried this and it worked well. Like, you know, that's just recording an album. Yeah. That's just process. Yeah, I liked it. It was really good.
Yeah, the song was a little understated. Like, it wasn't a big belter, but it was cool. And I don't know. Like, I liked this plot, and we'll see. So. Okay. So then back at Nyada, it's basically the ribbon cutting ceremony of this place with June Dalloway, Shirley MacLaine, and they come in and it's all they introduce her, she comes in, and then like Kurt performs, and like I said, I thought this was gonna, not that I thought we'd see like all 10 performances or whatever, but I was under the impression this would be like a showcase for various people, not like one act performing. But apparently the one act is Kurt, who's meant to be backed up by Blaine, singing One Direction's Story of My Life.
All right, Natalie, before I let you go into this, I give you 3 minutes to rant. And then
I don't need 3 minutes. I don't think I even need 3 minutes. It was fucking terrible. It was so bad. Okay, you may or may not know, dear Glee Chat listeners, if you follow me on Twitter, I love One Direction. I'm obsessed.
I think everyone knows that. I think it's just a show by now.
This isn't even like, oh my god, Glee covered my babies. I actually really loved their cover of What Makes You Beautiful when they did it in season 3, I think, like at prom. Like, I thought that was really cool. They did Live While We're Young with the Warblers, which I was like, meh, about. This was so bad. And I watched it and I was like, is this meant to be bad on purpose? Like, number one, I don't really like this One Direction song. It's okay, but it is not that good. And it's definitely but nowhere near my favorite, you know, and I'm just like, ugh, about it. But I don't know, like, when I heard it, the recording of the first time, I was like, god, this isn't very good. I mean, Blaine sounds okay, but this isn't very good. Then when I watched the scene, I'm like, have they chosen this on purpose to sound, like, to make Kurt sound bad in order for it to be like, oh, look at how Blaine is standing out. Look at how they're giving him this beautiful angelic lighting and turning up the volume on his parts. Like, I feel like he sounded okay. Like, you know, he sounded better on other songs. Kurt sounded terrible. It is not the right kind of song for Chris Colfer to sing. And I am really confused by why they would want to choose this. And my only explanation is they chose it on purpose because of the plot, like because of June Dalloway, you know, like basically they kind of both, you know, look at her and you know, she watches them in the performance. And then by doing that, the ending plot is that she basically sort of is like, Blaine is going to be my new wonderful pet and person, and you, I'm going to keep you, and you're going to be launched on society, and I'm going to make you successful. And so Blaine had to stand out to her, and Kurt had to sound terrible. I mean, it's a matter of personal taste for her, I guess, but the way they did it, I'm like, I really think they chose this on purpose to be a song where it's like, oh, Kurt kind of is not doing the best he could, or is, you know, it's not the kind of thing that really shows him off. But when Blaine comes in, it's like, oh my god, the angels are singing or whatever. So, I don't know. Do you reckon it was shot like that on purpose?
I mean, I have a few opinions and a few questions for you.
Yeah, go on.
I think it was a shot in a way that, Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, Kurt was, like...
He was kind of dancing around sillily, and Blaine was all earnest, and it was, like, it was so set up, like, you were meant to think Kurt was ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think that like, it goes back to the fact that Blaine had no idea who June Dolloway was, and he was kind of just... I mean, Blaine's always so natural and calm in performing anyway, so, like, I'm not surprised that... And, definitely helps he had no idea who the hell this chick was, and Kurt was, like, so starstruck, and so that was definitely... thing, but also, okay, I don't want to discredit any of the music selectors or whatever on Glee, but I don't know how much thought goes into some of the songs that they choose, so I don't know if they really, really put much into thought and go, oh, Kurt might not sound great on this sort of India pop rock sort of song, like, but whereas, like, Blaine will, and as well, like, I mean, I've listened to the the cover, like, that they released, and if you actually listen to the chorus, Chris Colfer is so much more, like, prominent and evident in the chorus, whereas in the show, Blaine's vocals are... Yeah, so, I mean, there's definitely that difference. But I have a question for you, Natalie. Okay.
Yes.
It's more of a question about the song.
Yes.
Did One Direction actually write this song?
This one, I don't think so. They wrote, like... I will very, very, very quickly check that for you. They might have done a co-write on it, but there are, like... That new album that they've put out has 18 songs, including the extra tracks on it. And I think they wrote on, like, 14 or 15 of the 18. And I feel like Story of My Life is one of the few that they didn't, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
I'm just going to check that though. I feel like it might have been one where they one of the earlier recorded ones where they kind of sat down with songwriters and they were kind of like, okay, so we're going to kind of shape this song around what you want, but there are other songs on the album that members of the band wrote, if you know what I mean, as opposed to this one.
The reason why I'm asking...
Yeah, no, it's not written by the band. Sorry, oh, okay. Go on.
Well, anyway, the reason why I was asking is because, like, I mean, with my experience with One Direction is I don't think I've heard their first album. No, I haven't. I've heard, like, obviously What Makes You Beautiful and stuff. But
yeah.
On the the second album is Live While We're Young, right? And Kiss You and all that.
Yes, that's Take Me Home.
I've heard that one. Yep, I've definitely heard that one. And Kiss You is actually my favorite One Direction.
Kiss You is my favorite One Direction song as well. It's the best pop song of the 21st century. Like, flat out pop song. The construction of that song, I could literally write. I have actually written, like, a lot about it. It's the way it breaks from the style. It goes from the chorus into the bridge into the chorus is, like, it's superbly put together as a pop song. But yeah. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, I mean, and I never knew how much One Direction has... So, like, that's my experience. I've only heard the first album. I see him in media everywhere. But I know through, like, hearing you, even on your Teen Wolf podcast and, like, the chat, that there's so much more to them, like, sort of thing. So I've always interested, like, if they actually had written this song. It sounds... And even just as a casual listener, like, the only time I'd heard this song had been over, like, I mentioned last week how my old work we had the radio playing on in the background. Only time I heard it was really the chorus, so I didn't even recognize the verse. And I always thought, wow, like, as a listener who only just hears their songs, it's so different to their other ones in a way.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's very India sounding, which is really, it's really good. And the lyrics, like, the reason why I asked about if they had written it is because, like, the construction and, like, the sort of symbol that kind of comes into the chorus, it's all very, very, like, wow. Like, this is a very, very, very well-produced and written song. Yeah. So I was, like, thinking, oh, if they actually wrote this song.
Apparently, they did.
So much credit to them. Not that I ever gave them credit, but,
No. I'm just looking at the track listing now. They apparently did a co-write on this song with Jamie Scott, who wrote a lot of their earlier songs. Basically, that means they sat down in a room with him and he was like, so what do you guys want to put into this song, if you know what I mean? As opposed to them going off and being like, so I've got this song that I'm bringing back to you, which a lot of their other songs did. You should listen to a song called Through the Dark, which is on their album. It's Jack, I'm going to link you to a blog post I did about One Direction. It's very long, but it's got some helpful videos.
Okay.
Anyway, Through the Dark is the other song on this album that sounds really like Mumford & Sonsy, which is like, it's very, very, very indie. And they did Story of My Life and Through the Dark on SNL a few months ago. And they did it like acoustic, almost a cappella. And I remember seeing Twitter's reaction when they did that, those two songs, and people being like, wow, they have gotten so good, and this sounds so, like people who are not One Direction fans, like bros, you know, on Twitter being like, wow, One Direction sure have changed into a legitimate band kind of thing. Like, it's really, like,
yeah,
it is
very. And that's what I hate about.
Sorry, go on.
Sorry.
No, go on.
That's what I absolutely hate about, like, people my age and their views on music. Like, literally, when I joined Facebook in like year 9, maybe end of year 8, which for me would have been like 13, 14, yeah, I was always seeing shit about Justin Bieber being like, oh, Justin Bieber's gay, you know, that's what people would say. I don't say that. And like, they'd say, like, there'd be memes on Facebook about him, there'd videos, everyone hated Justin Bieber, he was the mock of the town. But, and even up to before he's only just gotten, he's completely messed up his image, I was still, like, 5 years later, I'm still seeing shit about Justin Bieber on Facebook, because people just find something to attack, and they just go straight towards it. Same with
the
Miley Cyrus.
The thing about
like,
it is...
See what she's done on the Music Awards. No one knows anything to do with her music. They just, yep, she's I'm not saying this, that I think this.
Yeah.
But people say, yep, she's a slut. Yep, go straight towards her. And that's what I have at One Direction. Like, they see all five fairly attractive, very attractive guys singing together. They're kind of younger. Oh, yep, they're all gay together. Yep, all right, let's shame them. No, that's it. And I hate that. People just view that. And then when see how good they are, they're just like, oh, wow, but we're too ashamed to admit. They will say we like One Direction now, you know.
People
fucking hate it. I hate it so much.
Look, we could have very long conversations about this. At the end of the day, when it comes to Justin Bieber, even when it comes to Miley Cyrus, or you know, when it comes to One Direction, when it comes to a lot of pop music, people do basically just, if teenage girls like a thing, the rest of the world immediately discredits it. And that is people have done, like, you know, not scientific is not the right word, humanitarian, like, humanistic analysis of this. If something is supported by teenage girls, if something is hyped by teenage girls, despite the fact that teenage girls are the largest group of consumers in the world, and, you know, basically controls the way an industry works, that audience.
Yeah.
But, you know, despite that, yeah, if teenage girls like a thing, that thing becomes not a legitimate thing to like by other people, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that is something that people need to get the fuck over, basically. Whether you like One Direction or not, I don't care. But the kind of dismissal comes from, oh, you know, it's, you know, they must be this because of all of the screaming, you know, 14-year-olds. And it's like, yeah, screaming 14-year-olds are probably the most powerful force in, like, the marketing on the planet. So whatever.
Yeah, and due to that, like, that definitely, like, furthermore goes into masculinity with, like, guys my age who are...
Yeah, like, they can't, like,
say gay, straight, but, like, virtually straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'll give you an example. Like, a guy I used to work with, a friend of mine, his name's Josh. I remember when the whole Miley Cyrus stuff happened, this was last year, and then it was only when Wrecking Ball started coming on the radio. He would only say to me, because, like, I think he thought he could only say to me, just, like, I actually really like that song sort of thing. But he would never say to any of his other friends that he liked Wrecking Ball. You know what I mean? Like, it goes back to the shame that you can't like a pop singer like that. You know, it's just, it gets me so angry.
Yeah. It is very stupid and it's very ongoing. And, I mean, Justin Bieber's a whole nother story, because Justin Bieber's a crazy pants person now. But if you've seen the Justin Bieber movie, the Never Say Never movie, you actually see his rise. His rise to fame is super grassroots. Like, it's super, like, organic. Like, he, you know, did his own thing, and he toured around to record companies being like, please play my song. Like, he was not manufactured in any way, if you know what I mean. Like, he was discovered. He wasn't, but he wasn't like, oh, we're like going to put this, you know, like, it wasn't manufactured like the way they used to do pop stuff in the 90s. Anyway, as I said, this could be a whole another story, but One Direction, I don't know if it was the right choice for Kurt and Blaine. Don't know if it was the right choice for Kurt and Blaine, whatever.
Yep.
I wonder which member of One Direction is Kurt's favourite. That's something to ponder for the ages. Anyway,
based on looks, actually, okay, we can't keep talking about this, but I have another question for you, Natalie.
Yes.
I follow Zayn and Liam on Twitter.
Oh no.
What is up with Liam? Because I'm a big on like one.
Okay, no.
I follow them on Twitter, and I see you comment on it as well.
My
and
God.
I just don't know what's
Liam. Literally could be another hour and a half worth podcast on the problems of Liam Payne. Jack, we shouldn't even go into this, I swear to God. But yeah, Liam Payne was very, very, very bullied in school. Very, very, very uncool. Grew up with an illness, like he had a kidney illness, so that he basically couldn't drink, so he didn't really discover teenage drinking or whatever. He was very, very, very uptight until he... Pardon?
Is it celiac disease? Oh, no, that's something else.
No, it was a kidney thing. But he had one kidney that didn't work. I don't know. But very, very, very uptight until, you know, he was put into the band. He was actually successful on X Factor before he was in One Direction. Like, he got through quite far, and then Simon Cowell told him to come back in 2 years when he was older. Like, he started it when he was 14 and then he tried again. And he was kind of really uptight and really like, oh my God, about it. Where the other four were all like, lol, 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 when they were all put together in the band. Basically, he has, like, so he is, my thing about Liam Payne is that I think he's overcompensating right now. Like, I think that he is trying to look cool to the people he would have wanted the approval of when he was 15, if that makes sense. Like, and I'm like, dude, everyone, like, it's fine. Like, you can calm down. People are just going to, like you for yourself. You don't have to try and be this, like, I don't know. He is the one that I predict will go off the rails. I hope he doesn't, but he is the one I predict will go off the rails from being like, oh my God, lol, I'm so cool, I'm drunk, it's cool that I'm drunk, and everyone else is just like, yeah, okay, sit down, Liam, it's fine.
Yeah.
But,
like, just purely, like, viewing him on Twitter, to me, like, I mean, as I said, One Direction,
tries
I'm not so...
hard. That's the thing. He tries too hard. The others are all very, very comfortable in being who they are or being who they want to show the world, if you know what I mean. Like, Zayn is very comfortable just being quiet and not being out there that much. Louis is very comfortable being a douchebag, and I love him for it. Harry is very comfortable being as weird as he wants to be and not caring what people think of him. Liam is trying so hard. He's just... And not in a good way, not in a like, oh, good for you, making an effort. Like, I'm not, like, he contributes a lot to the band. He does a lot of the songwriting with Louis. Like, he's a great singer. But oh my God, his personality, he's just so desperate for approval from, like, I don't know who, like douchey chav dudes that he went to school with or something. Like, look at how cool and famous I am. I don't know. I don't want to talk about Liam anymore.
Based on Twitter. Yeah, just based on Twitter, all I can see is that, like, I mean, as I said, I just don't have much to do with the fame of One Direction.
It's fine, yeah.
It just comes across as just not caring. Like, he just doesn't care. Like, he'll just say what he wants sort of thing. But that's just me. That's just how I see it.
I mean, it kind of is, but it's not that in a good way. Louis, for example, is like, he knows exactly when he's fucking over the PR training he has, and he'll do it because he doesn't care in a good way. He'll do it because, like, someone's insulting his girlfriend, or he'll do it because, you know, he doesn't approve of the way people are acting. He'll just be like, fuck you, I don't give a fuck, I'm going to call you out. Whereas Liam, he's like a 13-year-old who's just discovered human rights or something, and he's so dumb about it. I can't talk about this. It's so bad that this is, like, going on the record. But, like, he's so dumb about it. He needs to calm down and just – he needs to chill out. Like, and it's just – it's very stressful. Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's keep – So, Blaine, June Dalloway basically invites Blaine and not Kurt to be her date to this fundraiser she's hosting. He kind of, this kind of, you know, the scene where she very harshly, you know, is like, oh, you know, she kind of tries to be subtle about it, but Kurt is absolutely starry-eyed and thinks that she means him, and she's like, yeah, not you, you know, in terms of, you know, who she wants to kind of support and think is a you know, brilliant talent. And she makes Blaine come to this fundraiser with her, and, you know, he'd had a conversation, you know, Kurt and Blaine had this conversation basically being like, Kurt it does genuinely seem to be kind of supportive, being like, oh, it's okay, like, you know, we're in anything you do, you know, I'll be there for or whatever, and it, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, it's just career stuff, like, you know, it's not like you're gonna be like hanging out with her like friends. And then cut to the next scene and June's like, oh, for me to, you know, help you, we need to be friends, and I need to know everything about you, and we need to spend time together and all of that. So, like, it's all very, you know, Blaine's obviously like, oh, well, this isn't exactly what I signed up for, but whatever. You know, June finds out that the donors there haven't donated quite enough for her liking, so she's like, I'm going to go and earn us our supper, and basically she and Blaine get up and sing Piece of My Heart, like, to basically introduce him to all the wealthy and also get them to donate, you know, to whatever it is, the cause that they're there for, which this never really actually stated. But I don't know, what do you think of June's character from, like, her attitude in this, like what she says, you know, to Blaine about her society and friendship, and like her, you know, speech about to the others about, you know, introducing Blaine and about, you know, getting up and performing and stuff.
I mean, I definitely have many thoughts about this. Like first of all, back to when after they perform at the ribbon cutting, I don't think June Dalloway was trying to be like subtle at all. Like, I don't know what's up with her. Like, she would talk to, like, she was talking to Blaine and Kurt and say that they want him, or they want them to do. Okay, no, she's saying that she wants Blaine to go to this place with him, this fundraiser and all that. Like, she says all that, but as she's talking to Kurt and Blaine almost like she's going to ask both of them to come. Like,
between them, flicks her eyes.
But she does it in a way that isn't, like, you said it was subtle. Well, I don't think it was subtle. Like, she said it in a way where she's, like, expecting for Kurt to be like, yeah, of course, like, you're saying I should come with you, I'll come with you. And then she's like, oh, no, not you. So that was kind of weird. And then in this scene, I mean, I definitely know that a lot of people didn't like them singing Piece of My Heart, but a lot of people think that, like, I think it was just people, I mean, I can't remember who it was over Twitter. I think it might have been Marie on Twitter. Yeah, she's very active. She, I think she said it was just Janis Joplin, and it was just the voice that they couldn't, like, compare to. Anyway, but I definitely I only heard this today, that a lot of people think that June Dalloway's motivations and everything are homophobic. Now, I did not even think this once in the episode.
I didn't think that either.
What I've gathered from this is that
I can sort of see that now, but I didn't think that watching it. Okay, go on then.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Like, what I've gathered from this is that, like, okay, so at the start, she chooses Blaine over Kurt. When Kurt goes up to her, she's a bit, like, more cautious, obviously, because he's more the flamboyant.
Yeah.
You know, like, because he's more flamboyant, obviously. And then, ultimately, she says that he needs to break off the engagement. And I've heard, I don't know if this is true, but Shirley MacLaine said something in an interview, like, that Darren Criss is really good. He's able to act like a non-gay man off screen, or something like that. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is, but I wanted to bring it up to you because I didn't see this at all. Like, honestly,
I mean,
homophobia on Glee right now is, like, non-existent.
Yeah, what do you mean he's able to act like a not gay man off screen?
Well, I'll try and find the quote. I was talking to
He's not. He is a not gay man off screen.
I know, that's what I mean. That's why it was weird. Like, he's a straight man.
Yeah, I literally had dinner with his agent when I was in LA, and we were talking about this. She was like, represent three of those kids, and they're all straight as arrows, and they all play gay characters, which was Max Adler, Grant Gustin, and Darren. And we were, yeah, just she was just like, it's so funny that people think otherwise, because off screen they are all so straight. But
I just realized I've read the quote wrong.
Okay,
she says,
yes, please.
And Shirley commended Darren for being able to act opposite a gay man in behind the scenes. So she's talking about
as in acting, keeping his own, like acting opposite Chris.
And then she also says, Simone also says that, like, I'm reading the message straight off. She says, I was very interested in the gentrification of, this is what Shirley says in a behind the scenes thing. Yeah. She says, quote, I was very interested in the gentrification of the set. It's so wonderfully homogenized. You don't know who's gay, who's straight, who's transitioning, all this wonderful stuff that the young people are experimenting with. And Simone says she got strange vibes off that. So I don't know. I honestly have no idea if,
I mean, homogenized just means, like...
I don't know anything about Shirley MacLaine, so...
That's kind of weird. Like, I don't even... Was she talking about, like, being on the set of Glee? Like, I don't...
I think so, yeah. Like, I don't know. Like,
I'm not... I'm just going to put that over to the side, because that sounds a little strange. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Now that you've said that, I could see that being a plot line and not even crossing Blaine's mind, and then it being this big, like, reveal of, like, you know, him... I don't know, but...
Yeah, that reminds me of... have you seen Queer as Folk, Natalie? I think...
Yes.
Have you?
Yes.
Yeah, sir. Like, there's... I have not seen this show in, like... ages. Who's the bloke who's on the violin? And doesn't he have a plot line where he has to
Ethan.
Not be gay? Yeah, like, he doesn't have to... He has to be not gay to be able to, like, be represented... I would be interested if that's what they did with Blaine
now. Oh, I can't remember, but yeah. All right.
Yeah,
Ethan. It's, yeah. He leaves Brian for him, and then he goes back to Brian. Yeah, I remember. But, yeah.
I'd be interested if we did it with this, except I really don't think we will, because obviously they're in, like, they just sung a Janis Joplin song. Like, I don't know, like, it's just, we're too far.
I feel like it cannot be that, but I'm interested now. But anyway, so, I don't know, she, in general, it's, you know, I feel like her, I mean, she's kind of a bitch, but, like, I don't know if that's a bad thing, like.
And she looked drunk when she was singing this. she looked drunk.
You know, the stuff that she said about, like, I don't know, and sometimes I also wondered if, like, she more went off Kurt because of the things that Blaine said about him, like, you know, oh, Kurt thinks that you're, like, too fabulous to need friends, like, the fact that Kurt wasn't really treating her, like, not to make Kurt, like, the villain in this, but, like, the fact that Kurt wasn't really, like, treating her like a person, like, because he was starstruck by her, and, like, you know, her then saying no, like, you know, my friends are everything and blah, blah, blah. And then you kind of see, you know, more of how people in that upper class society are also just as human as everyone else. But is this the story the show really wants to be telling? Like, oh, rich people are people too. Like, is that what Glee is doing now? Because I'm very confused.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't Gossip Girl, people. But I don't know. It's weird. But, yeah. I don't hate her, but I'm confused.
Yeah, she's just acting oddly. Like, I'm kind of more disturbed
by that interview stuff you mentioned, and I'm gonna look into that. But anyway,
yeah, I mean, it could be totally taken out of context or, like, perceived the wrong way. But I don't know. The whole thing's a bit odd.
Yeah, but back to the others. Mercedes kind of is in her studio doing her recording and kind of has this showdown with Deshaun, or what was the producer's name, is that right? Deshaun?
Deshaun.
And basically she kind of decides that she wants Santana to duet with her on the last track that on her album, and her and the producer are kind of arguing about it, and, you know, she's being a bit demanding for someone whose literal career is completely in the hands of other people because the public don't know who she is yet.
And the fact that in the next week, if she doesn't succeed, she'll have it dropped, you know.
Yeah, I think it's not that she'll have it dropped, it was more like they weren't going to get, like, the album slot, like, it's actually, like, literal a production thing, a tech thing. If it wasn't done, the stuff wasn't going to get done in time for the album date that they'd promised, so it was going to fuck everyone over, basically.
Oh, okay.
It would have been a breach of contract, because obviously they're dependent on that, but yeah, it would have basically, you know, wasted everyone's time and money for it to not be ready in time. And he's kind of very cool. I really like this guy. Like, I don't think he's going to have much of a part, but I really like him. He was kind of very, you know, supportive, and he's like, look, I understand that you want to support your friend. It's really nice. He's like, if you really want to do a duet, like, let me get you someone who can help you, like, because they're more, you know, famous than you. And then Santana can, like, be back up on the track, and it makes total sense. And Santana knows it makes total sense. And even though Mercedes, you know, is demanding about it, and Santana's kind of like, no, like, I'm not, you know, I thank you for this, but I'm not worth that. If, you know, the positions were reversed, I'd, you know, be heeding the advice of this very sensible and experienced producer. But I don't know, it's completely sensible. It's completely logical. But it almost felt like, you know, Santana, you know, because it's not the kind of thing Santana would usually do, it you know, felt like so weird, like that you know, that she wasn't being, I don't know, like grasping and crazy and finding a way to make it like all about her. Like, I mean, I liked it, but like from someone else it would come across as logical and sensible, and from Santana it kind of feels like she's got major depression or something.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think, like, with this and what happens at the end, like, she just wants to be a better friend, which is, and I mentioned this in the recap, and I know that I've been very off Santana in the episodes where she was stealing Rachel's role. But, like, I mean, this is the type of redemption that I really, really, really wanted from Santana. Just, like, casual in the background, well, not in the background, but subtle sort of, like, calm stuff, but, like, still maintaining who she sort of is, but being a good friend. Like, I don't know, it's very not like, now I'm going to be the best friend that anyone could ever want, you know? She's just like, all right, now, you know, I'm sorry. Like, it's exactly what I wanted, so I'm really happy that we've
objectively, I loved it, but subjectively, because Santana isn't like that or wasn't like that or didn't know how to express that, it seems like she's so down, and it's kind of...
It does feel like that, yeah. Like, she's been left without saying anything, but...
Yeah, but I don't know. But, yeah, anyway, more of her momentarily. Rachel basically calls in sick to work, and we see her out in L.A. on the lot of... it's the Paramount lot. I don't know what lot it's meant to be in the show, but it is the Paramount lot. And the car, she goes into the audition room, and God, this scene was amazing. Because she starts to sing Bette Midler's The Rose. Like, she walks in and she was like, I'm Rachel Berry and I'll be singing The Rose. And it was so beautifully done. So she sings the song Bette Midler, The Rose. And the whole time the kind of casting agents are kind of like, they keep being like, I just want to stop you there. Can I? And it's just like, and they're all like, what the fuck is this girl doing? And like, and it's just this little like moment of like, and they keep trying to stop her, and then you know, she doesn't notice because she's oblivious, and they can't. And she finishes the song, and then they kind of tell her that it's not actually a singing audition. And I kind of loved this because I know that we don't like lampshading, but it's like, there have been so many auditions for like things that are plays or musicals where we haven't seen them do an acting read. We've only seen them sing, if you know what I mean. Yep, exactly. And I was just like, oh my God. And they're just like, yeah, this isn't a singing audition. This is a scripted television show. You need to read the script. And basically, it turns out to be a sci-fi show. She thought it was singing because it was called Song of Solomon, which I don't think that means that they'd be singing, but whatever.
But granted, like, I'm not defending her, but the guy, the producer, whatever, didn't even tell her what it was about.
I would have wanted to, like, assume off screen, like, this is the kind of thing that even if you didn't see it, made logical sense off screen for that to have been, like, emailed through to her, potentially with the script, like, the pages that she would have to read. Like,
He said he forgot to do it, so, like,
he didn't do it. Well, that's just dumb. But what?
That's so weird.
She comes in and basically is unprepared for this audition, which she does a table read with the guy, like the very attractive but ridiculous lead in the show.
He was attractive?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh.
Not quite dirty enough for my taste, but yeah, kind of.
No, you sounded so Aussie then. Not so much dirty for my taste.
Well, I don't know. Like, I like guys that I like. I generally like people that are like quite scruffy and unwashed. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It was terrible. The audition, and I don't know. Like, do you think Rachel Berry, not Lea Michele, Rachel Berry, has the potential to be a screen actress? Because the way she delivers lines as Rachel Berry trying to act is very, like, overdone and theatrical, which does work in some Broadway, if you know what I mean. But yet when you actually see her on stage acting as Fanny, she's actually good. And we never actually see her employ that act. We never see her acting in anything else. And I don't know, like, do you think that she could actually be a screen actress?
Rachel, I would say not yes.
Leah. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say yes in the future if she was to get her proper training, which she is not going to get from NIADA because she quit. And even when she quit or left NIADA, Whoopi Goldberg, Carmen Thibodeau said, you don't have the skills to go out in this world and do that. So that's the thing. Like, they're addressing the fact that Rachel does not have the skills or the requirements or, like, even the, I don't know what the other word is. Like, I don't know. She's not ready for the world that she could potentially be thrown into if she quits NIADA with no more education. So that's the thing. Like, right now, like, you can see she's got no clue how to. I mean, granted, she was taken aback.
Yeah.
But I don't think even just reading for, like, a normal show that she thought that would be for. I don't think she'd be able to act very well because she's got no skills for it. And they even mentioned again in this episode where, what's his face? Sydney says, oh, you're just an immature, ambitious girl. I was like, well, of course, yeah, she is. And it's because she's quit NIADA and because she's only like 19, 20.
Yeah, I mean.
So that's the thing, right? That goes back to what I said before. Weird. I don't know where we're going. I don't know where we're going with Rachel because, like, we've gotten to this point where we should have gotten for a few years. I don't know.
I mean, the thing about her as well is, like, as an actress, like, Lea Michele obviously is not as, you know, she doesn't walk around life like talking to people and reacting to things in the way Rachel Berry does. She's able to put that on. Whereas Rachel Berry, if that's her actual personality and that's her actual delivery of like her real life dialogue when she talks to people, like, you know, how overdramatic she is, I don't know how she would play any like understated or like realistic roles, if you know what I mean. Like, I could only see her in old fashioned theatrical roles where overdoing it is, you know, is the key. Like, I couldn't see her doing like, you know, playing anyone except Rachel Berry. So I'm curious about this, you know, untitled Rachel Berry project that we'll see later. But I don't know. Yeah. Anyway.
I mean, like, maybe when she was, like, 30 or 40 and she wants to get out of Broadway, yeah, of course, like, she'll be able to do something on screen in TV. And they even mentioned, like, Meryl Streep, you know.
Yeah.
Like, they even say that,
Meryl Streep didn't really start becoming a famous screen actress till she was in her 30s, at least.
And that's what I mean. Like, that's where Rachel should be at this point then, you know. But instead, she's done it after, like, a month.
Yeah, so. I don't know, man. Like, it's weird. But, sorry, I was just looking at Meryl Streep's Wikipedia. So basically she's like, well, that sucked, and, you know, leaves and is very upset and all of that. And then she gets a call from the producer, Sydney, who is like, it's good that you feel better from being sick because your understudy fell off the stage. And basically, apparently they don't have a second understudy, which is not generally true. Usually there's a swing who can, anyway, I'm not going to get into technicality of Broadway, but Rachel's just like, oh my god, fuck, and needs to get back to, you know, LAX to fly back to New York in time for curtain, which is a very, very difficult thing. Like, I think she even says in the car, she's like, I need to get on 10 a.m. flight, because when you fly from LAX to New York, you lose a lot of time because the flight is 6 hours and the time difference is 3 hours. So it's like, even though it's only a 4 hour flight or, you know, four or five hour flight or whatever, you lose more time than that. So like you could leave at 10 a.m. and then land at 6 p.m. if you know what I mean, in New York, because of time difference. So it's a very difficult flight to to miss and to make. And so she must have gotten there the night before, done her audition at like 8 a.m. and then tried to get this 10 a.m. flight back. And she doesn't make it, obviously, as we will see. And basically she could be sued for having, you know, if they find out what she's done, you know, or if they have to give everyone refunds. She calls Kurt to try and, you know, get her out of it and all of this stuff. And it's just, I'm just looking at it going like, girl, look at your life. Like, look at your choices. Why are you there? Like, why have you, if you had any semblance of like sense in any way, you know, what, you know, you would have said to the guy, can I please do the screen test on a Monday? Like, not that, basically, for anyone who doesn't know, Broadway shows don't usually run on a Monday. They go 8 shows from Tuesday to Sunday, and Monday is their one day off. That's 95% of shows. They'll go Tuesday, and then they'll have a matinee and a regular performance on Wednesday, matinee and a regular on Saturday, and the others are all just one per day. So she would have been, anyone with any scrap of decency, you know, if that guy really cared about, like, her, he would have been like, yeah, you could come and do it on the Monday. And then she could have got back, if you know what I mean. But whatever.
It just goes back to how she, I mean, like, yeah, she's been talking about how she wants to be on Broadway since she was a kid. But it just goes back to the fact that, yeah, this is her biggest dream, but she's got no training. I mean, she's got training from the show, but it's just like little things like this show that there's no like knowledge of how a lot of, like,
she doesn't know how to handle herself. No, not
yeah, a, and like I said, they've addressed it. Like, they've addressed it. She doesn't know. So where are we going to go with
that's
this?
That's the thing.
Like,
they keep she was not made out to have been making the right choices in this episode. Like, she's very much made out to have been really not making the right choices, and yet, you know. You know, just skipping forward to this, basically, I just want to go through the rest of her storyline, and then Blaine's. Basically, Santana, they you know, Kurt is, you know, trying to get Mercedes and Santana and everyone to help out with what's going to happen. Basically, Mercedes actually tries to force Santana into signing a record contract. I don't know how this, like, helped the situation. I don't really understand, like, Mercedes got the contract and then they're like, sign it. And because Santana's like, oh my god, you're an idiot. What you should do is rip this up and go back and apologize to Deshaun. Like, Mercedes can't just create a record contract behind people's back and be like, lol, she signed it. Now she has to be on my album. I don't think that's a thing. I don't think that's how.
Yeah.
I was very confused.
I'm so confused. Yeah.
I loved the dialogue. Like, I loved Santana kind of being very, like, mature and caring. And I loved Mercedes being like, no, you make me better, which was very, like, oh my god. But I don't know, like, it was weird, but I really liked that little scene of even though it didn't make any sense. But then Kurt comes barging in with all his, like, terrible ideas for how to, like, stall the show, like
Barbara's in the parking lot.
Yeah, bomb threat, like Barbara singing outside of the park. Beautiful, but oh, he's so ridiculous sometimes. And then Santana's like, oh, your ideas are horrible, and basically they have the solution of Santana going on and doing the role. Once, and yes, this would never happen in reality.
Yeah. I have many things about this. Okay. All right. Rachel has been auditioning Funny Girl for, I'm going to say the episodes, all right? Rachel has been auditioning for Funny Girl since episode, I guess we can assume, okay, I don't know about episode 3, but at least from episode 4 to 9. And in that space, that would have been about from, I don't know, like maybe October to March, right? So October to March, she's been auditioning without an understudy. In March, I'm just saying this based on our timeline. In March, Santana gets this role, and then there's no big time jump. So she's only auditioned since episode 9 to episode, 13? She's been rehearsing for this place. That's only a few weeks.
No,
there wasn't. It was from episode 9, which was Frenemies, which is when she gets the understudy after Rachel's already had months and months of... Okay, well, I don't know about months and months, but Rachel's already had training.
Yeah.
And then she's already had training. Then Santana already gets this understudy role. It's only in it for like 4 or 5 weeks and then quits. And then Rachel has all this training, then goes on to
previews and then, yeah.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. So Santana, I highly doubt that she could pull off a whole Broadway show in 5 weeks.
Well, so do like, I. Yeah, so do yeah. I. Mean, she might know it well enough to, like, better than nothing, if you know what I mean. I don't know. It's very strange, and it would, like, basically, you know, whatever. The point is, she knows the show better than anyone else currently available, despite the fact that any of the other women in the cast should know it, like, down.
Exactly.
Whatever, let's not. And yeah. And basically she goes on and you know, and it, you know, as much, as unrealistic it is as it is, it's kind of a nice moment. I don't know, I thought, because like it's like Santana, you know, we had all of those conversations about Santana just wanting fruit of some sort, you know, which if you've been listening to our show, you'll understand what I mean by that. You know, that, you know, she didn't necessarily want Rachel's red funny girl apple. She just wanted some sort of fruit and was grabbing at any fruit that she could. But it was kind of, you know, after all of that of like her, you know, being a you know, douche about Fanny and then quitting and not actually doing it, if you know what I mean.
So it's just a douche about Fanny.
I know. I was just like, fuck. Sorry. Oh my God. Sorry. But yeah. You know, her being like that about that role and then coming back to it, you know, in this way, it's almost like she didn't get to do it until she had, like seeing her do the role, you know, in a moment that was like, it was like she only got to do it when she really deserved it, if you know what I mean. Like, when her attitude about doing it was right and, like, was just and was, like, she was actually doing it to help Rachel and with Rachel's best interests in mind as opposed to, like, and so, like, and in that case, she actually got to do it. And I know, it just seemed, like, symbolically nice to me in some way. And, I mean, she kind of accepted that she didn't really care about it. She, you know, afterwards, she's just like, oh, yeah, I never, you know, it's nice to do just as a one-off thing. And then, you know, we don't see any of her performance. Like, you know, afterwards, she's back at the apartment with Rachel, and Rachel says she got to see the second act and that, you know, Santana was really good. She assumes that Santana kind of wants something, and, you know, we get this big apparent revelation that Santana is just, like, wants to, you know, protect the people she cares about, and that she's kind of assessed all of that and is that going to be acting differently. So, yeah, what, you know, I'm sure that this was very exciting for you.
Yeah.
No further thoughts?
Yeah, it was good, like I said, because yeah. Santana's been so, I just haven't liked her, and now she's good. But, I mean, so I was going to have a question for you. Like, they were talking about the, well, I mean, we weren't going to talk about, like, the technicalities and, like, how she wouldn't actually be able to perform and to do with contracts with, like, Mercedes thing. But also with this, like, they're talking about how Rachel had a breach of conduct. Wouldn't, like, the whole show breach of conduct by allowing somebody who's quit and who's actually not part of the red cast go on there and perform? Because I'm thinking about how they would have to pay Rachel for giving everyone back their money and stuff. I mean, I don't know how it works in Broadway, because I'm not very familiar, but, like, I'm sure that, like, having them pay for somebody who's not registered on the cast, like, I'm sure that goes against the contract.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Oh, probably, yes. Like, but
what do you think?
Yes, probably it is not not in any way legal, but... What are you going to do? I mean, in this circumstance, it's really, really not good. Probably not legal. But I don't think that's anything that's ever going to get explained. And I mean, the ending of that story is basically that Rachel gets called into the office, as she should be, right? Like, and basically gets ripped into for lying and for screwing everyone over, and that she's just an irresponsible, ambitious, arrogant child, which is all true. And basically that he wanted to fire her, but that the director, who we haven't seen in a while, I miss him, good old Peter Fascinelli, and all of those said that they can't because Rachel is this, like, show, it's like her name and, you know, her debut making the thing. All very, very true. But, you know, so he's in this circumstance where, you know, basically he is so resentful of her and is probably not going to forgive her too easily, but is stuck with her. And if she ever does anything like this again, she'd be toast. And I mean, yeah, she's only 6 weeks into her first Broadway show. It's not like she has any reputation to back her up or anything like that. So that was all very justified, and it was like it possibly should have ended there as a like slap in the face to reality, Rachel Berry. But instead she gets this phone call from Lee Polblatt, who's like, yeah, so you probably know that that didn't go well and you didn't get the part. However, I do believe you're this massive, gigantic talent, and we want to make a whole new show around you. We're sending a writer to come and see you in New York to see what kind of material we could make about you, basically. And she's, like, crying and, oh, my God, so happy. Yes, this is going to be the best thing ever. So, I mean, what did you think about that whole thing? Because I felt like she just got rewarded for bad behavior.
I mean, I don't think she got rewarded because, like, the producer isn't saying, oh, you just, you know, fuck yourself up here, but, you know, here's a TV show in return. I just think it was absolutely ridiculous how she was threatened to never work on Broadway again, and yet she actually, you know, decides to take this extra role. I think it's just ridiculous. And I'm still going back to what I said, like, I don't know where we're going with her character anymore. Like, I have no idea, and it is a bit annoying because, like, I love Rachel so much, but, like, I just don't understand how she can literally have her whole career reputation threatened, but yet she still goes to what originally caused for her to be caused for her to nearly be fired anyway. I just don't understand how she can do that. Like,
I don't really
either. I don't know. See what happens.
I mean, I feel like it's kind of that, you know, the whole idea of this writer and I feel like developing something like that early on, I feel like that could potentially be realistic in that it wouldn't necessarily interfere with Funny Girl if they're, like, using a writer to develop a show with her and all of that kind of thing. It could actually be a process that takes a couple of years, and maybe the time jump in season six will be 2 years down the line. Tony winner Rachel Berry's new television show is going to debut, and it'll be set in LA or something. But, you know, like, I feel like that, you know, developing a new show from scratch actually maybe could potentially work, but I'm still a bit, like, whatever about it.
Like, in terms of Glee, it's going to take one episode.
Yeah.
Like, by the last episode of this season.
Yeah. Like, when they do musicals in a week.
20 million viewers, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Grease, yeah.
Yeah, like when they do a musical in a week, which is so not true. But, yeah, so, I mean, that's the end of that plotline. And, I mean, as we've said, the title of the finale is the Untitled Rachel Berry Project, which I'm going to assume is, like, them working on this television show. And, like, I don't know, like, maybe season six will be it, as I said, going into production in LA or wherever they decide to film it. Like, but, you know, maybe they're sick of not being able to use, like, their LA locations, given that they're right there in LA. And they're just like, oh, we've run out of budget, so we're just going to film everything on the Paramount lot. And what we're going to do is just, like, shoot the Paramount lot. Like, you know, like, and not, like, pretend they're somewhere else.
Yeah.
But I don't know. sorry. But the other sort of ending of the plot line is the June and Blaine storyline, throwing back to kind of their plotline in the middle of the episode. They go and have lunch and, you know, he's just so bewitched by her, and he's like, she's kind of like, oh, what attracts you to this life? Is it like the money or the power? And he's kind of like, no, it's just you being like the center of everything and being able to bring things together and like make things happen and all of that. And, you know, and she basically kind of says that like life attracts life, and that's why she was attracted to him. And he's so overwhelmed that she sees him that way. And it's just like, oh, I don't know, it's all very, oh, sickly kind of. But basically, she says she's going to organize a concert to showcase Blaine. And he asks if Kurt can perform with him. And she, because he believes that, you know, they're engaged and they do everything together and the world needs to see Kurt's talent. And June's basically like, no one needs to see that, which is so cruel. But yeah, harsh. And then it has an interesting turn, basically, because she says some stuff which is meant to come across very harshly, but it's possibly something that people on Glee all need to listen to, which is basically she kind of says that, you know, he's all like, no, she basically is like, no, I know you didn't ask me, but I'm telling you, you should break up with him. And he's like, I love Kurt. And she's like, yeah, and I've loved people too. You know, she basically says, you know, like, love, you know, people fall in love, they break each other's hearts, it's what people do. And then she says something really interesting to me, which is she says, people think that, you know, the first time you love someone is the most important, but it's not. It's the test, like, of basically, I guess, of, like, how you handle yourself and, like, how you react to things and stuff like that. And that, you know, it's different for so many people. Like, it's some people really, you know, it is the most important, or they never, you know, get back to that, or it's, like, even successful their whole life. But, you know, what she said is certainly, it definitely rings true, like, even for me. Like, I think that would be a very accurate description. And I don't know, it's just something, like, Glee has always been so hung up on, like, people's first couple that they had in high school being, like, the end game pairing of, like, their life forever and ever. And it's like, they're in high school. Do you know how many people out there in high school actually stay with the people they're in high school with? Maybe in small towns, but it's actually not that common. And, you know, it's something we've talked about on this show for years and years. Yeah. And years. So, I mean, what did you think of her saying that to him?
Yeah, like, I definitely agree with you 100%. Like, the show's always, like, first love. Oh, it seems like the show's been, like, first love is going to be end game. You know, like, they even use the term end game in the show with Finn and Rachel. But, like,
yeah.
I mean, the time around I thought that it wasn't going to happen was when they broke up with Tanner. And I'm not, like, I don't know. I try and stay out of, like, a lot of the shipping...
culture.
Shipping fandom, like, yeah. It's almost like a sub fandom or a fandom, like the shipping fandom.
Yeah.
Yeah, culture, yeah. Like, I've heard, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but I've heard that Ryan Murphy had no intentions of getting Britannia back together, except then he did in, like, the special 100 episode. Mm. And I mean, in terms of, like, first love and stuff, I mean, I'm not going to get into, like, personal things, but I know that a lot of other people probably would have a lot more things to say who are older and have experienced more, because I'm only, like, 18. But, I mean, it's definitely true. I definitely think that first love for a lot of people is a test. It's like, you see how you will handle yourself in future relationships and how you can be resilient if, like, it ends badly.
Yeah.
And what I want to bring up as well is when you sort of said as well, no, she says in the show, yeah, it's a test. You've got to find out who yourself are. But it reminds me back to one of my favorite moments ever of Teen Wolf, like, for some, like, and it's because it rings very familiar to me, and, like, what,
yeah,
we're talking about
the thing with the mother.
When Mrs. Melissa McCall, Scott's mum, says to Scott McCall, who's the main character, he says, I mean, this is all in terms of him having to control his wolf powers, and he used to use his ex-girlfriend Alison Argent as, quote, an anchor to bring himself back down and calm him down to get back to his human state, really. And he can't do that anymore because of this thing that's going on in his mind. And Melissa just, like, grabs him, and she says, be your own anchor. And that is one of my favorite moments ever of Teen Wolf, because it definitely, like, affects me. And I think that's very similar to this, how, and even, like, in general, like, you need to find yourself. And Blaine has thrown himself into something so young, so deep, so young, that he might lose himself in a way. So I like that we've got this character here, similar to how Melissa McCall was, like, you know, snap out of it, you know, be your own anchor, yeah, set yourself right while you're young, and yeah. So it's a bit of a tangent, but that's just how I feel about the situation.
That be your own anchor conversation was actually based on a real conversation that Jeff Davies, who's the Ryan Murphy of Teen Wolf, if you like, they're very much the sole creator of Teen Wolf, a conversation he really had with his mother. A lot of the Scott and Melissa's conversations, and Melissa as a parent, is very, very strongly based on Jeff's mother, and I love that. So, yeah, that's cool. But anyway, I don't know. The Blaine, like, and June thing, like, it came across super harsh, but I was kind of like, yeah, I really back that. I mean, yes, obviously I want Clayne to break up because I hate it, but I don't know. It just... And it just makes me wonder if Blaine is thinking about it, because basically the end of his storyline is he goes home in the, you know, and he's like, you know, Kurt's like, I haven't seen you and all of this. And Blaine's kind of like, oh, well, you know, June and I, you know, and he kind of doesn't know how to explain to Kurt what's been going on. And he ends up being like, oh, we've been planning a concert. And Kurt, to his credit, doesn't seem legitimately, like, bitchy about it. He's like, oh my god, that's so great, I'm so sorry that I was, like, bugging you, that's so awesome, and blah blah blah. And Kurt and Blaine's like, yeah, we were trying to finalize your part in it. And Kurt's like, oh, you're so sweet. That's so awesome. Number one, this Kurt, I'm like, who are you? Like, I've never seen you act this, like, unaffected and, like, genuine before, like, with Blaine. Yeah. But I don't know. It's just like, so basically now Kurt innocently thinks that June is, like, chill with him, except June secretly hates him. And I don't know, this probably won't end well. And, I guess Blaine lied to him out of not really knowing how to handle the situation, but probably not the best thing to do. Where it's not like he had to say, oh, yeah, June hates you. You know, it just, you know, he didn't have to say, you know, unless he thinks he can talk June around. Like, he could have just not said that he was, you know, going to be in it. But, oh, I don't know. I don't even see how this story is going to end at this point.
Yeah, neither do I. And... yeah, I mean, I don't know whether, like, and if Blaine calls off the engagement to Kurt, I mean, at this point,
it would be the grossest reason. I want them to break up, but it would be the worst, grossest, most grasping reason. Like, how, like, yeah, okay, if he takes June's advice about love, that's one thing. But if he does it, like, for his, like, career and so he can keep being June's, like, puppy, it would be awful. I mean, oh, just how gross, like. I don't know, man.
Yeah, and that's what I mean as well. Like I mean, as I was saying, at this point in the show, I hate Blaine so much. So I was a little unaffected by him in this episode, I think, because I just don't like him as much. So I just don't really care as much. But when Blaine proposed to Kurt, Kurt seemed like he didn't want it at all. And Blaine was so just like, marry me, go out with me. You know, he was so into it. And then now if this is what it takes him to break up with Kurt,
oh my
god, so,
no one in this show
laugh so hard.
Would be satisfied.
Like, I hate Blaine, but he would fuck Kurt over so much.
They get what they want. Everyone in the show gets what they want, and then as soon as they have it, they don't want it anymore, and it's just like exhausting. It's like, guys, like, come on,
yeah,
work it out. Like, but I don't know, the Kurt and Blaine thing, they have conflict of some sort. Their conflict is always so competitive. It's not like they're fighting over something. It's like they're always fighting against each other for the same thing, whether it's like,
yeah,
to be attractive or to, you know, to have this, or like they're so competitive with each other. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing in a relationship, but like they have so much resentment or like from one side or the other, or, you know, or potential resentment because they're competing for things all the time. And I don't know, it's so weird to me, but I don't know. Anyway, I don't see how this is going to end well.
Any healthy couple will fight, obviously, but, like, not over everything, you know.
Literally every week is, like, a different thing that they're, like, competing over in some way. Every week.
Yeah.
And I don't understand whether we're meant to be backing this or, like, it's like, oh, my God, look how many obstacles they can overcome together. Like, no, I'm sick of them overcoming obstacles. Fucking break them off. I don't care anymore. Like, I thought I cared again, and I'm just done. Like, I do not care anymore. They need to stop. Anyway, okay.
Yeah.
So that's the end of the episode. And as we said, next week is Old Dogs New Tricks, which is going to be about Kurt apparently getting a role as Peter Pan in a nursing home production. And I've got a feeling it's going to be very interesting to see how Chris Colfer chooses to write Kurt. Not just how he might choose to write Kurt and Blaine together, if we see any of that, but just how he sees Kurt as a character compared to how, like, various writers have seen Kurt. You know, whether he thinks Kurt is more manipulative or more innocent than, you know, because it really varies, like, from, you know, one episode to the other. Like, you know, Kurt can be completely crafty and cold, and then in this episode he seemed to be totally innocent and oblivious and a victim, and I'm just like, this is really flip-flopping around. So I'm interesting to see how Chris Colfer, as an actor playing Kurt for, you know, nearly 6 years or whatever, sees the character from his own perspective.
Oh, definitely, yeah. No, I agree.
And the other characters as well, obviously, but it should be a bit of a change from the usual. It's gonna, I think, and then we have the season finale, and then we'll be done until, I guess, September or whenever season 6 is gonna come out, the final season of Glee.
Yes, exciting. I mean, definitely with Chris Colfer's stuff. Like, I'm sure you've seen Struck by Lightning, and I've seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a very I almost want to say like a very like Juno sense of humor.
Based on
what I saw.
He's
from that
very
movie.
Dark. He's like, very, and he's very dour and like very, I don't know how he sees Kurt, but Carson in Struck by Lightning is definitely like a self-insert character. It's how he sort of saw himself, or a cooler version of how he saw himself, he said. So, and even his children's books, which I've got and have read, they're weirdly dark, or like the social commentary in them is like weirdly, like really good, but also like kind of full on. And so I'm very interested to see what he says, you know, what he does as a Glee episode, you know, and it should be interesting, but we shall see, I guess.
Yeah, my only complaint is that I really hope it's not fillery. Like,
I think it will be one that doesn't really move the plot along or doesn't really affect the long-term plot of the show, which is a shame.
I hate that. Like, every season we've been getting that towards the end of the season. Like, okay, for example, last season, I mean, Stevie Wonder is one of my favorite artists ever. I cannot say how much I love Stevie Wonder, but that episode was complete filler. Like, it was complete filler. And same as, like, we're definitely getting that towards, like, I suppose end of season 3, prom was very sort of just like, yeah, okay, there's prom, move it forward, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You know, so I hope it's not, but I think it will be.
Yeah, I do agree, actually. I think it probably will be. Oh, sorry, I'm yawning now. It's probably a sign we need to finish. But I think it will be filler. Hopefully it'll be very good quality filler, but I think it will be filler. We'll see. I don't know anything about the plot lines that are going to happen in this episode besides from Kurt. So it should be interesting to see what he does with the others that are there. I think some of the songs are quite good. I think Sam and Artie have
some. Werewolves in London.
Yes, Werewolves of London, Warren Zevon. I was like, I haven't heard it yet, but I was super excited for it because that's
same. I'm so excited.
Such a good song. So yes. And I like, so I'm just.
And Sam and Artie are back, so that'd be
good. Yeah, because they weren't in this episode at all. Like, so that should be good. So
well, Artie wasn't in the last episode. So that...
Yeah, Artie just don't exist no more. Okay. I mean, he's still a regular. He's still contracted for every episode, I assume. So I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I suppose if it doesn't need to be on, like, he's not really, like, making the plot essential. Except I want to bring up as well, Natalie, I forgot to say on the last week's episode.
Yeah.
I remember back in, it was Trio, when Artie wasn't in it. And Artie wasn't part of the Trio because of, you know, you said you think it's because they couldn't find another way to get them into the school because they couldn't jump through the window.
Oh, yeah, the episode when, the graduation, Tina and Sam and...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then right when I was thinking about it, I think, like, a few days ago, I was thinking... Why wasn't Artie like? They really could have brought Artie in the Broadway show. Like, they really could have done it. And then I thought, oh wait, how are they going to handle? I mean, they could have done it, but maybe they couldn't be bothered handling Artie in a wheelchair in the club when they did Pumping Blood. Like,
oh really?
Maybe that's just me thinking because I was so overwhelmed by that song. But as I said,
like,
it never came up when I was
like, oh, I can't be bothered finding an excuse or taking like 20 seconds of airtime to show like Sam and Blaine like lifting him through the door or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
except they can mention why he's not there, you know. They can mention
why
he's
there
not
might have
there,
been a reason why Kevin McHale was not available, but yeah, I don't know. I am still convinced that was the structure of the plot of that Trio episode, though. I'm so sure of it, and it's such a douche move, but I think it's true. Anyway.
Yeah.
We should probably go, and hopefully you guys have been satisfied with just our two obnoxious Australian voices and no American opinions on Glee this week. And hopefully you're not too annoyed about our talk about Hannibal and New Girl and such things at the start of the episode either, because, yeah, oh well. Sorry this is a bit late. We'll try and fix up next week for as soon as possible after the episode comes out. It's a bit difficult at the moment, but hopefully it will be good, and hopefully next season we will be better. But, yeah. If you enjoyed this, let us know, because we like compliments. If you don't like it, don't come and say anything, because I don't want to hear it. So, yeah.
Or say it, but just don't be rude about it.
Well, there are two types of people. No, that's fine if you don't like it, but yeah, you'll just have and if there was a little bit of interrupting towards the end, it's actually because there was a lag in the recording that we are trying to work our way around, as opposed to just giving up. So there might have been times where one of us came in over the top of each other. It's not because we're being bitches to each other. It's because there's literally a lag in the recording and we can't hear when each other starts talking. So we are totally winging it for you.
If none of you don't know, I actually don't like Natalie. So.
Oh, is that true?
Yes. No, no, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just go. no. Anyway, because that's sometimes a complaint, and not to bring up air dirty laundry. A complaint I've seen occasionally on some of our podcasts is like that, you know, people, you know, don't let each other talk and stuff like that. It's actually because the medium of podcasting, when you're not looking at someone's face, it's very hard to predict when they're starting to talk. So sometimes two people start talking at the same time. And right now it's even worse because it's literally like Jack will think I've stopped talking, but because there's a lag, I'm still talking, and then anyway, I'm going to try and edit it and fix it up a bit, but yeah, we are very nice and kind to each other, and hopefully we both got to say everything that we wanted to say.
Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, because there's only two of us and we are very opinionated, so yeah. We probably got more than what we intended to have.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, hopefully this was okay, and we'll see you all next week, and all have a lovely, lovely week until then. So, so that's all from us, I guess. So, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.